Today is a bonus episode specifically to talk about the Sitzer Burnett lawsuit. I'm bringing on Bryn McLeod, co-founder and partner of MMH Law Firm and a former litigation corporate attorney. This is a lawsuit that has instigated misleading and false headlines, which include co-op commission is unlawful, 6% isn't okay, and no longer will it be, which that is a loaded statement in of itself. Buyers don't need agents, won't use agents, home prices will be lower. Well, the Sitzer Burnett lawsuit, you know, it's not old news, and then it's not new news either, because it's something that most of us have been hearing about for a few years. I've insisted not to give any power to it because I believe it is very misleading, especially the headlines, and don't want to give that power because it's increasing the danger that it's putting, hey, not just real estate agents, most importantly, there are some serious unintended consequences of what it's going to do to the buyer and seller, of increasing home costs, and worse, liabilities, misunderstood, unforeseen liabilities and costs to the home sellers and buyers. So Bryn, he's the attorney we're talking to today. He's who I worked with as a top real estate agent in Atlanta for 18 years. This guy shoots holes and sees holes in everything, which is why I love him. Because in the years of working with him, that ability, his brain and his ability to shoot holes in all of it, is what got me and my clients in front of any problems. And in doing that, we quickly created opportunities, even in what may have seemed at the time, before we saw those solutions, the worst of situations. So Bryn and I are going to talk as much as we can fit into this 30-minute conversation, what this lawsuit was, the parties involved, the missing headlines or misleading headlines, because there are missing headlines that are actually relevant and important. What really happened? We're going to go into hidden opportunities. And what by opportunities, I mean, in every problem, there's an opportunity to have a real conversation about what's really happening. There's an obligation of us real estate agents to know and understand, to be clear on what happened. Like, what really happened? Who is this lawsuit about? Who's the plaintiff? Especially the plaintiffs, and who's the defendant, and what's going on in that courtroom? So we're going to talk again as much as we can in 30 minutes, and peel back the layers, getting to the truth. We need to be positioned so that we understand this, to help pivot our industry, to serve our clients even better, so that we can empower ourselves to be heard. And in that, ensure that we protect the best interests of our clients. This is the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Powered by Breakthrough Luxury Coaching, this podcast was created for real estate agents across the world to come together and listen in on conversations with the top real estate agents in the United States and around the world, sharing their stories and ideas and what takes our business to the next level. All right, everybody. It's the Jerry Metcalf Podcast. We have an extra episode we're inserting today because this is a really important conversation that I have been really quiet about this topic. And I'm bringing on an attorney who can speak intelligently alongside my thoughts and research and opinions on it to share with everybody. And guess what it is? The Sitzer Burnett lawsuit. On that note, Bryn McLeod, partner and founder with MMH Law Firm and a former corporate litigation attorney and the smartest real estate attorney I think I might have ever worked with. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk about this topic.
Ooh, okay. So as we go with that, I want to just give you some extra intel. So Bryn McLeod is on this because he was the attorney I always used when it came to real estate closings, real estate transactions, real estate anything. There were so many situations where if there was an issue that everybody said was impossible, I'd pick up the phone and Bryn would continue to shoot holes in it, which is what I love about this guy. He shoots holes in everything, but he shoots holes not to be right. He shoots holes in things in a way that you can peel back the layers of your own BS and get to the truth, which gets you to solutions. And he is the most brilliant guy at it. So with that, I just have to add more. I'm going to give you some more shout out, Brandon. I'm going to calm down. But this guy, when we dealt with closings, there were situations where these deals would not have closed, and he would step up. Things would be discovered. We had title issues not only with one property that affected five next door. He came in, took over, saw the recognized the issue, solved it for everyone, and didn't ask for a thing from anyone. He just solves problems. This guy is like, if there is a problem, this guy understands it to the point that it peels back the layers of what's wrong to let the solution rise. Just to repeat, Bren, seriously, thank you so much, because of anybody to bring on and talk about this interesting topic, you are probably perfect. No, you are
Well,
perfect.
thank you. And I am ready to shoot some holes into some of the media myths that we've been hearing about the NAR settlement that just came out last week. So I'm ready to jump in. Are you?
Let's do it. Yes. Now, here's what I'm thinking. Here's what let's do. He and I have talked a lot about this offline. Y'all could probably tell. Let's talk about what the lawsuit is, who's in it, and what it is. Then let's talk about the settlement. And then let's talk about where things really are. And a lot of this stuff going on, a lot of the misleading headlines, a lot about what people are saying, what they're thinking, and peel back to what the problems are and what's not true, and where that shows opportunity. How's that sound?
Sounds great.
So let's start with this. Go ahead.
Okay, so I think the first,
Lawsuit.
let me hit ignore. Okay, of course the phone would ring right when we're getting into this. So the first thing we have to understand is what was the lawsuit about, really? And so to boil it down and make it really simple, there were two things that the lawsuit really targeted, in my opinion. Number one was the participation rule that NAR had, which, if you're not familiar with that rule, the participation rule required sellers, in order to put their listing on the MLS, to make an offer of a buyer broker compensation. And the plaintiffs' lawyers did not like that. They felt that that was anti-competitive and inflated commissions. The second thing that they didn't like is they didn't like that there was a sharing mechanism. Which we've always known as the cooperation. Some people call it the cooperation commission rule. Other people call it sharing commissions. And so what they didn't like was that the commission flowed, the total commission for the seller and the buyer went to the seller's agent, the listing agent, and then the listing agent would share a portion of that commission with the buyer's agent. And so the lawsuit targeted that practice as well.
Wow. Well, here's what I've got. Tell me what you think about this on the lawsuit. So, as I did all my reading, and I am not the attorney, everybody, let's be very clear. I am not the expert in the law. What I was, as I'm reading through the lawsuit, here's the three things that came out to me is number one, so you've got the plaintiff, right? You have the attorney who's coming in, who's a class action lawsuit attorney, who's gone in and found situations or people have found him. In this situation, he found, as I understand it, and he says, "Hey, this is illegal. This isn't okay." And he gets paid. He's gotten, tens of millions. I think there's some billion-dollar lawsuits as well that he. And his name is Mike. I don't even remember Michael. I always forget his name. No,
Benchmark.
thank you. I won't even say why I forget people's names. It's like a subconscious thing
I
because I'm
know why.
really excited. Say it. Say it.
You don't like them.
Right. There's some things I respect about a guy, but I find a lot of hypocrisy going on here. So anyway, so he comes along and says, "Hey, wait a minute. There's the Sherman Antitrust Act. It basically says what NAR's doing is illegal." That's where it all comes in. And then he says these brokers, because you've got defendants in the case, which is Nowhere, RE/MAX, I think RE/MAX, let me make sure I'm quoting these right, but Keller Williams,
Large
Berkshire
brokers, yeah.
Hathaway, the big brokers, they are guilty by association. And according to the Sherman Antitrust Act, number two, if you know it's happening and you're a member of it happening, even if you didn't create it, you're guilty.
You're participating in the monopoly.
Right. And the whole thing about the enforcement of the monopoly is the Sherman, I don't want to get to, I think this is important everybody to understand, because it understands like when Pete went, because there's a lot of emotion going on around this. And so understanding the facts around it will help Most important thing about deals is emotions are the problems, and understanding what's going on and understanding the emotions of other people is going to help diffuse this and pull out opportunity. So the Sherman Antitrust Act is enforceable because of the Constitution says when it comes to business across state lines. This is business across state lines, where in it all started because the oil businesses were getting together, creating trusts, and then creating monopolies, and then it was affecting and hurting the consumer. And that's the gist of it, right?
That's
So
correct.
as we go into that, you've got these, you've got the defendants over here, and the defendants have different attorneys. You've got the one attorney, Michael, who I can't ever remember his name, Ketchmark. That guy and his five key witnesses, I think only four of them came to the stand, all talking about, hey, I didn't know. I think I didn't realize I could pay a different rate. I didn't know I was going to pay the buyer's agent, so it's fixed pricing. I didn't realize I didn't have to do this. Oh, but I did have to do this. So basically, all of these people paid anywhere from around 5 or 6%, or between 5 and 6%. And they're all transactions between 200 and 250. And the defendants are, just for the record, everybody, I think it's important just to know the details of it. Teachers, a volunteer, or an executive director for Moms Against Drunk Drivers. And then the other one was a police officer. So those are the defendants. And the defendants were really like, I just thought I didn't know I could negotiate. And I think my
They're the
broker made
plaintiff.
too much money. The plaintiffs, thank you. I'm so sorry. Oh my gosh. I'm going to stop. But all of that, right? That's the who. And then when they got into it, where I was really going with this was the three things that I kept pulling, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Brent, are, is they talked about price fixing was happening, back to the defendant saying everybody said it had to be six, even though they didn't all pay six. Number two was the MLS cooperation policy, which is MLS is basically that it's enforcing anti-competitive or monopolistic activity through MLS, the NAR, essentially forcing everyone, when you list your property, it has to go on the MLS within 24 hours, or you don't get to participate. And number three is the cooperative compensation rule, also known on NAR as the participation rule, that says when you work with an agent, when you list your property with a listing agent and in MLS, you have to offer a buyer broker compensation. Now, you and I differ a little on this because they did say it could be a dollar. Now they're saying it could be $0. But those were the three points, right, that were brought up in the lawsuit. Now, by
Yes.
the end, no, go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I think that's the first thing we need to blow some holes in is that prices were fixed. I think that across most jurisdictions, commissions are negotiated. They're not fixed. And so I think that was something that has been misunderstood about our industry to start with. The second thing that I think gets confused is the participation rule and the co-op compensation rule. A lot of people think that the co-op commission rule is now illegal, and that sellers cannot pay buyers agents commissions. And actually, the settlement confirmed that that practice is there's nothing wrong with that practice.
Exactly. What the settlement is saying is the settlement is saying that, will you tell what do you want to go on that? Well,
Yeah, we can do that. Let's talk about what the settlement did. So let's talk about the settlement. In case you don't know the numbers behind it, NAR has agreed to pay $418 million to settle the lawsuit, and in exchange for that payment, they have also agreed to wipe out the participation rule. And so now, really, the only thing that has changed is that broker commissions that are offered by the seller cannot be posted on the MLS. And that's the big change. Instead of it being a broker commission section, there will be a seller concession. And so any offer of compensation made by the seller just cannot be posted on MLS. It can be made on the listing broker's website. But other than that, nothing has really changed. Sellers can still agree to pay buyer broker commissions and will agree to pay buyer broker commissions. They just do not want it flowing, through the listing agent side. It'll just be a direct offer.
well, something you keep reminding me of that I want to bring to light too, and all of this is none of this is even this is all in the settlement between NAR and the plaintiff, it's not even been approved by the courts yet.
Yes, and that is a very important point. The settlement is these rules that we're going to talk about would not go into effect until July of 2024, but that's only if it is approved by the judge. During the interim period, a lot of the trade associations can weigh in. The Department of Justice, if they don't like it, can weigh in. They've got their own separate litigation going. So we're not there yet, and this thing could change, but that's the direction that it's heading in. And so, really, for most of our practices, the only thing that's going to change, which really won't affect a seller at all, is that any offer of compensation made by the seller can't be put on the MLS.
Now, here's something interesting is you and I talk and we say it's okay, nothing's going to change. And I'm saying that as someone who was an agent for 20 years. A lot of agents, though, are really up in arms about it, which I find in some ways could be an admission of guilt. And in others could say, wait a minute, guys, I think we're missing the opportunity. And I think some of that might come from the fact that we are both born and bred in this business through the state of Georgia, where there's a lot of agreements that kind of like cover and protect, and that we've been dealing with in this, we're kind of in front of all of this in the state of Georgia. Because I've talked to agents in Florida and other states, for example, and I'm shocked at how much is not covered in how they conduct business with their clients to confirm that a buyer agent is representing a buyer and what a buyer agent is getting paid at closing.
Totally agree with that. And the other thing that did change with the settlement is that now buyer brokers are going to be required to have brokerage agreements with their clients prior to showing any properties. That has been the license law in Georgia since forever. I mean, we've been buyer agents have been required to have agreements with their customers. I guess in other jurisdictions, that is not a requirement, but it will be. And if you're a buyer's agent, I think that's actually a good thing for you in the long run.
Well, and here, so this is another conversation I've had is people will say, but Jerry, like nobody else is doing it. So why would we do it? It's well, that's the interesting thing. If the lawsuit matters so much and it's so important, it's actually going to change things, then that means it's going to change behavior. And some of the behavior it's going to change is as real estate agents working with buyers, we're actually not going to be the guys that are just expected to show up and let you in a house, even though we don't know you and don't have any sort of agreement with you. Right? Like, I'm not going to let you look, fix my kitchen sink without something, but I'm going to go show you a house and represent you on your home purchase without something. Like, that's insane. And so now it's enforcing the fact that we're professionals and there should be an agreement like you would have with anybody else to do anything professionally for you. And in that, it also discloses the compensation and we agree on it. Now, the fear is, but it's going to be zero.
Yeah, that is the fear, and
You're usually the negative one. I'm sounding all negative today, Bren. Like, what's going on with me?
well, it's easy to be negative when you don't understand something. So I think that's the whole part that we need to do is just understand that this settlement is really fairly simple. I mean, there's three things, right? You can't put a broker offer, a buyer broker offer of compensation on MLS. Sellers can still make those offers off of MLS.
And I
Then,
think they can make the offers through sellers. I think that sellers' compensation is interesting, but keep going. Sorry.
it is. And then buyer brokers are going to have written agreements with their clients. I remember a few years ago when they added the retainer agreement to the buyer brokerage agreement, and nobody wanted to get a retainer from their client. And for some reason, there's this historical, I guess, idea that buyer agents will spend all of their own money until the closing occurs. And I've never understood that. You pay for marketing, you pay for, all of this stuff that you're doing to try to find a house. You're driving around, all of that sort of stuff, and you don't get paid for it until the closing. I
Now,
mean,
I wonder if that will change because here's what I think about. And then we got some more assumptions we want to throw some holes in because we're doing a quick interview today. We've got about 15 more minutes. But what's really cool or interesting about all of this is that while there are a lot of people running around fearful in the residential world, I think they're less fearful in Georgia because there's so much of a different perspective on it. And maybe that's been a lot of my frustration with this lawsuit from day one and why I've like, I don't even understand why we're talking about this, right? But the other end is commercial. And I say commercial. My husband is a office tenant rep commercial broker. So I will just say I understand that commercial is a broad term, but in the broad industry of commercial real estate, it is a common practice that the what the buyer, tenant rep, or buyer broker, tenant rep broker gets paid is always negotiable and never the same. And every contract is actually pretty much not the same.
And
And so,
that's a
yeah.
fair way to look at where the residential side may be going a little bit more like the commercial world.
I think, and what's interesting is the commercial guys understand what they bring to the table, and they are, being not just being married to an office tenant rep broker who does well, but being, any of us, a lot of listeners probably have a lot more experience there than I do. But the level of respect, and when you think about how does this affect my ability to make money, their compensation through that design is significantly better than most agents that don't list properties and only represent buyers.
Agree. I think that's
Yeah.
a great point.
So let's get some of your legal expertise going here. Maybe what were you going to add to that?
No, I'm ready to blow some holes in a few
All
things.
right.
And so I think we've already blown the hole that, the idea of the myth that the media is putting out there that a co-op commission is unlawful. The settlement actually confirmed that the opposite is true. Sellers can still pay buyer broker commissions. They just can't put it on the MLS. Very, very simple, right? Second thing I've been hearing a lot of headlines in the media is that the 6% commission is unlawful. You talked earlier about the price fixing thing, and I think that's where that headline came from. But you tell me, is the 6% commission unlawful?
Well, that's a great, well, that'll actually get me back into some settlements that were done because the 6% commission, it's like, is it unlawful that we all know a Coca-Cola costs about, I should Google it. I'm embarrassed to admit I don't know what it costs, but a Coca-Cola or a soda costs about $2. Is that unlawful that Coca-Cola's typically cost about $2? Does that fix pricing by Coke and Pepsi? To your quote, right? But on
No,
the flip side, we'll go ahead and say,
I think that's just a free market thing.
yeah, and exactly. And so on the flip side of that, I do find it interesting that there's this 6%, 6%, 6%, because it's like, wait a minute. When you're pushing the 6%, you could inadvertently be price fixing. Now, I want to add to that 6% thing, because it's clearly not unlawful. What you want to charge is what you charge is what you charge because it's free market. And if it happens to be 6%, then so be it. Or wait, we can charge anything but 6%. I mean, but the other thing that I find interesting that adds into this 6% comment is I've seen in the media the word decoupling. Hey, and this is some media I'm quite fond of, so I won't quote who said it because I really appreciate the content they put out, but I've seen this word out go out that is, should commissions be decoupled? And I thought, well, they're it couple whoa, decoupled. I'm as a listing agent, which for the record, everybody, I did a lot more listings, especially in my last year of real estate than sales, 50 listings and two buyers, and the team took a few more buyers on. But just saying, when I listed a property, I wasn't coupling the commission. It was the listing commission. Then back to what you and I talked about, I was sharing a portion of that as agreed with the seller. So what do we mean decoupling?
Yeah, so decoupling, I think, is the
I know what
idea.
we mean, but it's very leading and assumptive. But go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Is. And decoupling, I don't like that term, and that's the term that's being bandied about. All they're saying is, when they're saying commissions are being decoupled, is that we can't have the commission sharing structure where the whole commission flows through the listing broker and then the listing broker shares it with the buyer's broker. They're trying to separate it so that the seller will pay his agent a commission, and then he will also pay the buyer's agent a commission if he wants to. That's it.
So this brings up two interesting things. So back to this decoupling versus the quote unquote 6% that if you ask Jerry Metcalf should be higher, because if we look at what the average real estate agent makes, they make less than all of the defendants, despite the fact that they're teachers, police officers, and executive directors of important volunteer organizations. They make less money on average, and they don't even have the benefits that some of these guys get. Okay. But going back, let's go back into the decoupling, for example. So using the term decoupling. So first of all, we've got this word 6% as if that's it. There's a fixed price that there's not. And then we're using the word decouple is what I'm witnessing is it's saying, oh, like it assumes that whatever we charge, we should just divide it by two.
Yes, and that's not correct. Well, I mean,
I agree
commission,
wholeheartedly, and I'm a little bit confused that people have just decided as a result of the lawsuit just charge half what they used to.
the idea that the buyer's agent's commission and the seller's agent's commission or the listing agent's commission are really all one and the same and baked into the 6% model, that's never been the case. As you've already mentioned, they've been negotiated for a long, long time. It's never been fixed at 6%. The media has put this idea out there that, hey, there's this 6% commission that the parties are colluding behind the scenes to split. And that's never been the case. I mean, these commissions have been negotiated. I mean, every contract I get, we have to look and see what the commission is when we get the instructions to commission to confirm the commission. We don't automatically populate 6% into our closing statements.
Because I remember how many times you guys would chase me down to get the information, right? And get the
Yeah.
signatures and get all the stuff. Exactly.
So, and let's talk about the 6%. Whatever the commission is, 6, 7, 8%, whatever it is in your jurisdiction, let's talk about why that is not going away. First of all, it's not going away because any seller who doesn't want to pay a buyer's broker a commission is going to be at a huge competitive disadvantage right from the get-go, right? Do you agree with that?
Wholeheartedly, yes. That's the whole reason why it's been. I mean, that's like when you, as an agent, right, talking to a seller, we want to create back to the Sherman Antitrust. It's all about not limiting competitiveness, which I think one of these things in the settlement saying that we're not going to say what commission is to the buyer broker limits competitiveness. But
Agreed.
to your real question is absolutely like our whole job is to create competitiveness for the properties we market to the utmost best of our ability in the best interest of our seller.
Yes. And so when the listing agent and seller are having a consultation and going through the process, the first conversation that's going to be had is, hey, here the seller listing agent's going to say, here's my commission. This is what I expect. For all of these services I'm going to provide. And you will also, you now have, as you always have, you have the option to pay or not to pay a buyer's broker a commission. And your seller will say, well, should I do that? And I think most good listing agents are going to say, yes, you need to offer a buyer's broker a commission because if you do not, we're going to be at a distinct competitive disadvantage. And is that where you want to be right out of the gates, where we really have 14 to 21 days to really, get a good offer and get your house under contract, which is what you shoot for as a listing agent, right? You want to come out of the gates with a great price, draw a bunch of interest, get a bunch of offers, and get it under contract. We saw that happen a ton during COVID, right? I mean, that was,
Exactly.
yeah. And so that's the same thing you want to do. And if you're not offering a buyer's broker a commission, it's going to hurt most sellers. And so I think
Exactly.
the point is that the listing agent is going to advise that the seller provide a compensation offer to the broker, and the settlements confirms that there's nothing wrong with that. It's business as usual.
Well, here's another thing to add. So the four, there's so many assumptions being made out there, but the four points we were really hitting on before this call, so we made sure we had some focus points for everybody listening is people are saying co-op commission is unlawful. No, the lawsuit has even verified that to this point. The settlement is not approved. But number two, 6% is unlawful. No, number three and number four, I kind of really want to hop to, but number three, buyers don't need agents and won't use them. We talked about that, even comparing it to the commercial world, which in the Breakthrough Luxury Coaching, we've actually got a top commercial broker coming on and talking about conversations with her buyers and how to do it. But number four, where we're really going with this is this whole concept and notion that this is going to make home prices lower.
Yeah, that's what's ironic about the settlement is the practical effect of it will probably be that prices increase for buyers. Right? I mean, if you think about it, if you have a seller, even if you have a seller who is saying, I'm not going to pay a buyer's broker commission, they're not going to take that commission and offer it as a concession to the buyer. They're going to try to keep that and put it in their pocket. And then if the buyer is going to have to pay his own agent's commission, that's just an added layer of expense on the buy side.
Well, the other thing, so there, right? It's there are two things that come to my mind. It's number one, as a listing agent and as a seller, we are going to not just get the most money for you as possible, but the best terms that also have huge effects on the money. And on the on and as you think about as you think about that's our job. That's it, to represent the seller in their best interest. Now, on the other end, you would go, well, then that's why we these buyer agents, like, whatever. Well, wait a minute. Unrepresented buyers who are not represented by a broker, the lawsuits that come about, the liability, the number of canceled, so you've got lawsuits, misunderstandings, liabilities, and then you've got canceled contracts by unrepresented buyers are bar none. I'm going to share the stats with everybody as a show note on this, but I bet it's like double or triple what it is unrepresented buyers. Besides the fact that when listings aren't represented by buyers for sellers, like the detrimental impact of the difference in price, the difference in terms that essentially and ultimately hurt all parties.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at for sale by owners, right? Let's flip the coin for a second. How successful would you generally say for sale by owners are in achieving a maximum sales price, versus what they would have obtained if they had hired an agent? Do you think they usually do better or do they do worse?
Exactly. Well, what's interesting is because we beg the question is, well, maybe houses would sell less for less without an agent. But what's really interesting is the seller sells it for less money. The buyer actually, though, ends up spending more money because when the buyer spends more money on doing inspections on houses and canceling because they don't have any guidance to negotiate it. They end up spending more money because sometimes they're paying more money for a house than they need to because they didn't have the representation to help them understand. Or they're buying a house that has issues like black mold, radon, and all of these other things that nobody was educated or experienced enough involved in the process or obligated in representing them to tell them about. And so now you've got somebody that, I mean, not to get so morbid, but literally you got people who end up in homes that could kill them because they didn't position themselves with the proper representation or in best case, if they figured all that out, how many times have we been in contracts where a buyer needs to get out and they don't know how, or that they can't, or what they can even negotiate because they don't do it that many times in their life.
Right. And that's the whole point is just as unsuccessful as for sale by owners are, unrepresented buyers, especially first-time home buyers, their success rate's not going to be any better. And if you think about the demographics that we're moving into in this world, we're going to have a lot of the baby boomers as they age out. There's going to be they've got a lot of properties to sell. You've got this whole generation of millennials who want to buy. So we're going to be trying to combine a lot of the younger generation buying from the older generation. And without agents, how do you think that
And
process will
totally
go?
different negotiating styles too.
Totally different negotiating styles. It's such an emotional process anyway. Buying and selling a home, you're going to have people selling homes that they've lived in for 40, 50 years. You're going to have buyers who are, chomping at the bit. It's their first time to realize the American dream. And are they going to be able to navigate that process without agents on either side? Lacking an agent on either side is going to make it very difficult.
And very
And
expensive for both parties, interestingly enough, and perhaps very lucrative to litigation attorneys out there.
it is. I get calls all the time from people who do not have agents, and they say, "Hey, I need you to, can you help us with this?" And they say, "We need a contract." And I'm like, "You need a lot more than a contract." And they realize that when I say, okay, and they say, no, we just need a contract. And I say, okay, so I'll play along. And so I said, send me all your terms and I'll put it into a contract. They'll send me everything. I'll put it into a contract, send it back, and then they sign it and they get it back to me. And then their first question is, well, what do we do now? They're paralyzed. They have no idea what to do. And, do you have a loan? Well, yeah, I'm getting a loan. Well,
Wow,
I mean,
right?
really, they need their hand held. And I have to explain to them, you really need to go contact an agent to help you through this process. You just asked me to draft the contract, and now you're asking me to be your agent. I'm not a real estate agent. Go get an agent. And Jerry, which begs the question, what would happen if agents stopped working altogether for like a month? What would get done in real estate and residential?
What would get done? What would get done?
Not
Like,
that
think
much.
about it, just like how would the showings happen? All the people that are, you know how like when you're in a deal and everybody there is somebody, we're talking about people's homes, people's family, people's money. What the agent disappears. What are they, maybe there'd be a few murders. There'd be a lot of lawsuits. There'd be a lot of deals not closing. There'd be a lot of litigation. What do you think?
Yeah, I think to your point, the showings wouldn't even happen. I mean, it's not always easy to schedule showings and, just to go see the property.
I wonder how many people would figure out how to rob houses through showing, like through getting it, because there's no agents to show and mitigate that whole thing. Think about what this opens the world up to. If it's even it, but the thing is none of this is real. And this is where there's a huge opportunity for us as agents to have a conversation that's been brushed under the rug and not interesting, and it's become interesting and really kind of awesome.
Agreed. And really what's going to happen is there are going to be buyers and sellers who think they do not need agents just because of all this media buzz they're hearing. And so let them try it. Let them see how difficult
Right,
it is.
that's
And they're going to be running back and be like, oh, now I understand what you do. Right?
And I think the most important thing in all of this is as agents, because we do it all the time. I'm not an agent anymore, but as we do it all the time, right? It's like you forget, don't forget. So everybody who's listening to this, we're gonna do some more of this stuff. I've avoided this topic, but now we're on it, about not just understanding this, but understanding the opportunities and the steps and ways to, let's not cower and run with our tail between our legs as if that's necess as if as if that shouldn't even be part of this. This is a huge opportunity, understanding it and the steps to make sure you're harnessing it for your business and most importantly your client, because that's why we're in business. Our clients need us and showing up for them.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I mean, it's almost cliche, but you've heard over the past couple of years and how we're in a skills-based market. And if you're a realtor, you need to make sure your skills are better than they've ever been. So it's a little cliche, but I think on the buyer side now, with a buyer brokerage agreement being required, I think that it is going to become more important that buyers' agents articulate their value to their clients up front so that buyers really understand what they're getting and what the buyers' agents are going to do for them. And ultimately, I think that's a good thing because it's going to make them more efficient and it's going to guarantee their compensation.
Well, it's like we keep adding and adding, but I think this is really, and then we're going to go because we're both running out of time.
Yep.
But here's what's really cool is everybody understands with a listing how it works. We have the opportunity to do exactly the same thing when it comes to buyer representation.
Brilliant point. And that's something that I think perhaps that our community or the agent industry hasn't focused on as much over the years, right?
And this has
But
done it for us. It's awesome.
yeah, now that there's a spotlight on the buyer side, great buyer's agents are going to probably do better than they've ever done before. And the ones who don't have the skills, they're the ones that are really going to either have to get with the program and enhance their skills so they can prove their value, or they're going to have to get out.
Love it. Everybody listen to this. Just Bryn McLeod, Atlanta with MMH. Thank you. Any of you guys who want more tools and steps, go to breakthroughluxury.com. We've got a webinar that is overall business development. We've also got a call coming up right after this podcast is being released about action steps to take. We're going to have that available ongoing for more and more opportunities for all the agents and everybody out there. Bryn, you're freaking
Thank you.
awesome. Love
Yeah,
you.
love seeing you. Hope everybody's well and keep working. Keep working hard.
Love it. You too. I'll
Bye.
see you soon. Bye. You rock. Thanks for joining us for the Jerry Metcalf Podcast. To get links to our amazing guests, past shows, and more, go to breakthroughluxury.com and click on podcasts, or find us anywhere you can find a podcast. And please subscribe to the show and leave us a 5-star review so that we know that you are getting the most out of what we bring you every week.